Good morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Kuf Nun Aleph. We are starting this morning on the very bottom of Kuf Nun Amud Beis. First topic of discussion today is going to be a better understanding of Abba Shaul and exactly what is he coming to teach us. In order to gain an appreciation over here, let us go back to the Mishnah and let's review the Mishnah from yesterday's daf. We turn back to Kuf Nun Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah gave us a number of halachas as we are here in the 23rd parak of Masechet Shabbos. We're finishing up the 23rd parak, and soon enough we're going to be getting the final parak of the Masechta. In the Mishnah, so the Mishnah brought down a number of halachas. If you look at the first one, Lo Yiskor Adam Po'alim B'Shabbos V'Lo Yomar Adam B'Chaver L'Yiskor Lo Po'alim. So the first halacha, which we already dealt with in depth, is the idea that you're not allowed to hire workers on Shabbos, as Rashi pointed out back in the Mishnah. It is a violation of Mimsoch Hatzecha. One has to disengage from any kind of business transaction on Shabbos, and contracting a worker on Shabbos would be a violation of Mimsoch Hatzecha, Divrei Kabbalah, the Navi Yeshayahu. Perek Nunches describes how Shabbos has to be a day different than other days. We discussed yesterday extensively the idea of Mimsoch Hatzecha. We discussed yesterday the idea of Daber Davar, that even when speaking on Shabbos, one has to be careful on Shabbos in terms of how the conversation goes. We discussed that yesterday in detail. Anyway, the Mishnah said, halacha number one is one is not allowed to contract workers. Then the Mishnah discussed a halacha, and that is a halacha of machshich and alatchum. And the idea is that we know that on Shabbos, a person is circumscribed within a certain perimeter, and he cannot go beyond 2,000 amas outside of the city limits. Going beyond 2,000 amas would be a violation of tchum. The simplest way to say it is that it's an issur derabbanan to go beyond tchum. Machlok is really tanaim, whether tchum is din deraisa or din derabbanan. Okay, let's leave it at that for now. Anyway, but there's an issur to go beyond tchum, and so the person, as Shabbos is coming to an end, is not going to walk beyond tchum, but at the same time, however, knows that he wants to be at the edge of tchum when Shabbos comes to an end because he wants to do something. And so the Mishnah says it depends on what he wants to do. So the Mishnah says, "Ein machshichin ala tchum l'skor lo po'alim ulahavi peros." So if the person wants to go to the edge of tchum as Shabbos is coming to an end because he wants to be in the best position geographically to hire workers, the Mishnah says that he's not allowed to do. You can't hire workers on Shabbos. You can't be machshich ala tchum to do so as well. Aval, however, the Mishnah goes on to say, "Machshichu lishmor or maybe peros biadom." But what a person is allowed to do is that he knows that he wants to guard a field. He wants to be in a position to guarding his field immediately after Shabbos. And so that means to say that he can now walk up to the area of Tchum as Shabbos is coming to the end and be in a position where when Shabbos ends, he could be right there by his field so that he can be Shomer's field. And as Rashi explained in the Mishnah yesterday, because the truth of the matter is being Shomer, Sada, guarding a field on Shabbos is not a violation of Shabbos. And so therefore, anything that you can do on Shabbos, you can be machshich ala tchum in order to prepare yourself to do for after Shabbos as well. And then the Mishnah also pointed out that you could bring back fruit, and we discussed yesterday, because that's not really your primary purpose in going there. Your primary purpose in going there was to be shomer asada to guard the field. And now we get to the rule of Abba Shaul. And that is, the Mishnah goes on, klal amar Abba Shaul. Abba Shaul says the following rule. Kol shani zaka b'amiraso, if I could talk about it on Shabbos, rashani lachshich alav, so then I can engage in this practice of being machshich ala tchum, going to the edge of a tchum as Shabbos is coming to an end, in order to do that which I'm allowed to talk about. So if I could talk about it, I could be machshich ala tchum for that action as well. That is Abba Shaul. Now, the obvious question which the Gemara now is going to deal is, what exactly is the contribution of Abba Shaul? What is he adding to our understanding of the Mishnah that we didn't know already? And this equivalency that he creates, that if you could talk about it, so you could be machshich ala tchum. What exactly is he coming to add over here? And so this begins now our discussion in today's daf, as we are now in the bottom of Kuf Nun Amud Beis. And the Gemara's question goes as follows. Now, Abba Shaul Ahaya, right? I skipped the word Zibailuhu. So Abba Shaul now is going on which part of the Mishnah? Ilema Reisha. Now, if you're telling me that it's going on the Reisha. Now, here, Reisha means the case in the Mishnah in which he's going to be Machshech Alatchum, so that he can bring back fruit. In other words, he wants to pick fruit, or socher sapalim, or he wants to hire workers. Both activities are going to be prohibited. So if Abishal is going on the case of the Mishnah where that which you're not allowed to do, so the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, I don't understand the formulation of the Mishnah now makes no sense. Because Abishal says that which you can do in terms of speech, you can do in terms of machshich al tchum. Why is he saying in the positive? So hi kol she ani zaka ben misav rashani b'chashech haso, as we're on the top of kuf nun aleph amud aleph, kol she ani zaka ben misav ani rashai b'chashech haso mi ba'ilei. So the Gemara says, so obviously, if he was commenting on the first case of the Mishnah, what you're not allowed to do, so then his language should have been, that which you're not allowed to speak about, you're not allowed to be machshech al tchum. And that's not what it says in the Mishnah, and so therefore, we gotta move on. So Allah Seifa Kai. So he's commenting on the Seifa. So the Gemara says, I'm a machshech chulish moro, maybe Paris Biado. Second part of the Mishnah, which is that you're allowed to be machshech al tchum so that you can guard a field. And then incidentally, if you want to bring back fruit, you're allowed to bring back fruit. But anyway, he's going on that case on the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, Hai kol shani zaka b'chashech haso, rasha ani b'amir somi b'ayleh. So the Gemara says, okay, but then it makes sense that now he's talking in the positive Abishol, but what doesn't make sense, however, is the order in which he presents it. If I'm allowed to talk about it, I'm allowed to be machshech al tchum. Let's consider. The Mishnah's topic of discussion was being machshech al tchum. If Abishol now is jumping off of the Mishnah, so Abishol says, look, let's go over the structure of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, here's where you can't be machshech al tchum. Then the Mishnah says, here's where you can be machshech al tchum. And then Abishol says, well, here's how it should come out sounding. If I can be machshech al tchum, then therefore I can talk about it. Okay? That's how Abishol should present his position. Meanwhile, that's not how he presents his position. The way he presents his position is that if you could talk about it, you could be machshech al tchum. It seems to be totally inverted. It's reverse. So the Gemara says, "L'olam aseifa kai v'Abishol ahakai." So the Gemara says, okay, Abishol is talking about the latter part of the Mishnah, and Abishol now is going on the following, meaning that what exists in the Mishnah, even though we don't see it, is that there's an assumed case that everybody agrees to. That's the way Rashi presents it. And Abishol now is commenting on that case. Now, what exactly is the case? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Motar L'Adam L'Omer L'Chavero. It's going on the following scenario where a person could say the following to his friend on Shabbos. Shmor li perosh betchumech, ve'ani eshmor lach perosh shebetchumi. So, you go ahead and you will watch I'll watch your peros within my tchum, and you watch my peros that in your tchum. Now, in order to understand this case, in which it exists in the Mishnah, it's kind of like hiding, it's lurking behind the scenes, it's right between the lines in the Mishnah, and everybody agrees to this. So in order to understand this and appreciate this a little bit more, so again, just a little bit of background over here. As we already established, everybody has tchum Shabbos. That means to say that everyone is circumscribed within a certain perimeter. And that means to say that wherever I am right now, I can only go 2,000 amas past the point of my shvisa. Now, if I happen to be in a city, so the 2,000 amas do not start until after the city limits. All this will be discussed in greater detail in Masechta Erevin. Now, two people are talking to one another, and they don't share the same tchum. And it's possible, meaning it's possible that two people can be having a conversation on Shabbos, and they're coming from two different tchum. Okay, and happens to be that like a Venn diagram, it overlaps in a certain area, and this point of overlapping is where they're having this discussion. Now, that means to say that because they don't have the same tchum, so one person can now arrive at a location that the other person can't get to, and vice versa. And so basically what they do is they make an agreement that is beneficial to both. And that is to say that one person says to the other, look, I can't get to my field. My field is beyond my tchum, but it happens to be within your tchum. And you can't get to your field because it's outside of your tchum, but it happens to be within my tchum. So, a simple request of reciprocity, and that is that I'll watch your field, you watch my field. And that is the case that is in the Mishnah. Now, again, I say in the Mishnah, it's not actually in the Mishnah, but this is agreed to by everybody. And this is the halach of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. I want to read it again. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mutar La'adam La'malach. A person can say to his friend, Shmorli Perishe B'tchumech, guard my fruit that's in your tchum, Ve'ani Shmor Lecha Perishe B'tchumi, and I'm going to guard the peris, your peris that are in my tchum, and V'kamar Abishol Tanakama. And Abishol now was saying to the Tanakama, Mila Modus the Mutar Adam La'malach L'chaveru, Shmorli Perishe B'tchumech, Ve'ani Shmor Lecha Perishe B'tchumi. And Abishol now turns to the Tanakama and says to the Tanakama, you agree with me that this kind of conversation is in fact permitted. So, the aim of Koshani Zaka Bamirsov, Rashani Lahakshi Chalav. So now we understand how he formulates this now as a rule. Because since the halacha that he's jumping off of is a halacha of Amira, so therefore, any Amira that would be okay on Shabbos, since they can have this conversation, so now that means to say that anything which is conversable on Shabbos, you're also allowed to be Machshir Chalav Tchum. Okay, good. So it took us a little bit, but finally now we understand Abishol in terms of what he's coming on, what he's commenting on, what the starting point is, and what he's coming to add to our entire discussion. Just as a really interesting aside over here, the Gemara says that two people could turn to one another, and one person can ask another person that, look, I can't go to that area because it's beyond my tchum, but you can go there. Would you be able to go ahead and watch that field for me? And so, just as an interesting discussion that is had amongst the Rishonim over here, I say interesting, by the way, and also very halach l'maisa. So you see over here that on Shabbos, I can ask another Jew to do something for me on Shabbos that I myself am not allowed to do. Interesting idea. Now, in terms of bringing it now to its next step, its next level, its next iteration. So let's say it's Erev Shabbos and somebody accepted Shabbos early, a Jew accepted Shabbos early, and another Jew did not accept Shabbos early. So can the Jew who accepted Shabbos early go to the Jew who did not accept Shabbos early and say to him, can you do the following for me? Now, of course, to ask a goy to do so would be prohibited because that's the Isser of Amir La'akum, but we're not talking about that. Talking about asking another Jew to do so, for the Jew who accepted Shabbos early, it's going to be prohibited. For the Jew who did not accept Shabbos early, it would, for him, be totally mutter. So can the former ask the latter to do a malach on his behalf, right? I forgot to leave my light on. Could you turn the light on for me? Would that be mutter? And from our Gemara over here, this is a starting point of that discussion, because our Gemara over here says that a person can ask another person to do something for him that he himself cannot do on Shabbos. And are the cases comparable with one another? And so, the discussion lies. We're not going to have the discussion right now. This discussion goes all the way back to the Rishonim, and it's a really interesting discussion. We're going to go on in the Gemara, but certainly something to think about. And obviously with very halachic, practical ramifications. Gemara continues as now we are towards the top of Kuf Nun Aleph Amud Aleph Klal Asuya Mai, Lasuya Hadatan Rabban. The Gemara says that when Abishal says that this is a general rule, what is it coming to include? The Gemara says the following, Machshichin al Tchum Lahavi Behema. A person cannot be Machshich al Tchum in order to bring an animal. Haisa Amad Tchus Tchum. Let's say the animal was standing outside of the Tchum, Kore Lavi Vihiba. So you can call the animal to come. Klal Amar Abishal. Abishal says as a general rule, Koshani Zakabam Mirasof, I'm allowed to talk about it, Rashani Lakshich Alav. So then I can be Machshich on that as well. And so as an example, that Machshich Lafakech al Iske Kalav. So let's say, Val Iske Meis Labi Elo Aram Vatachrichen. So I can be Machshich, a person can go right as Shabbos comes to an end and get right up to the border of the Tchum in order so that he could do preparations for the Kalav and preparations for the Aron Vatachrichen. The Almrim Lo, Lech Lamakum Ploni. And then a person can say to another on Shabbos, go to the following place after Shabbos has come to an end. Get me these items, Zim Lo Masatsab Makum Ploni. Now, if you can't find them over there, Have me Makum Ploni. So then bring them from another place, Zim Lo Masatsab Bimana, Have me Masayim. And if you can't get it for 100, get it for 200. And Rev Yosef, and all these instructions can be given on Shabbos. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, Omer, Vavash, Lo Yaskir, Lo Skum, Mekach. As long as you don't mention the total purchase price of the item. Okay. So again, as long as it is involving a mitzvah, so one could be mafshich al hatchom, one can have conversations about it as well. We discussed this in yesterday's daf, and this is just simply an application of what we learned in yesterday's daf, that for the purposes of a mitzvah, one is allowed to discuss, and since one is allowed to discuss, one is also allowed to be mafshich al hatchom as well. We are continuing, we're in the Mishnah, right in the middle of Kufnun Aleph, Amud Aleph, mafshich al hatchom lefakech aliskei kala. One is allowed to be machshich on tchom in order to deal with the kala. Val iske ames lavilo arim v'tachrich. And we just quoted this Mishnah. The Gemara now, this is the actual Mishnah. So one can go right to the edge of tchom before Shabbos has come to an end, so that he'll be in a position where either he can take care of whatever the kala needs, and also to bring arim v'tachrich. For the mace. Let's say a non-Jew brought over on Shabbos chalilim, he brought over the flutes. Jew may not use them after the Shabbos. Back in the day, in terms of a funeral, some changes have occurred over the years in terms of minhagim of funerals. But back in the day, it was very popular that flutes became part and parcel of the funeral procedure. Right? Think of a funeral that was that's done for a veteran. But anyway, but back then it was done for everybody, and so the flutes are being brought over on Shabbos and by a non-Jew, and you cannot use them. And if you could see an interesting Rashi over here, Rashi says, Lo yisbed mehem Yisrael. So Rashi over here writes, Le'olam, that the knas over here, the penalty over here, of having a flute being brought to you on Shabbos by a non-Jew, is a knas that goes indefinitely. And Rashi writes, V'knasu hu mishim demucha milsa debishvi lohuva. It was brought on your account. Dein derech la'vi chalilam ela b'shvil ha'meis. It was brought because of the mace. And so because it was brought on your account, and it was brought to you on Shabbos, so therefore you are not allowed to use it. Tosos over here objects to Rashi. Tosos right alongside, it is the fourth Tosos on the Amud, does not agree that this is a knas that goes indefinitely. Tosos says that it is bichde shiasa, the amount of time that it would have taken. But anyway, but an interesting Rashi, where Rashi says that the knas over here is le'olam. Back to the Mishnah. Elaim came Baumi Makum Karov. Now, if it happens to be that it was brought from a place that was within Tchom, literally a nearby place, but it was a place that was brought within Tchom, so then that would be fine, because then no violation was done for the flutes to get here. Also, lo Aron v'chafer lo kever. If let's say it was the non-Jew who prepared the Aron or dug the grave. So, Ikaver Bo Yisrael. So, if the non-Jew made the Aron or dug the grave, but he did so not specifically for a Jew, so then a Jew is allowed to do so, because now a malacha was not done on Shabbos for a Jew. However, the Mishnah concludes, V'im Bishvil Yisrael, but if it was done for a Jew, so then Lo Ikaver Bo Olam, so then a Jew may not use it forever. Because one is not allowed to benefit from an act from a mamlacha that was done for him by a non-Jew. Interesting over here, when the Mishnah mentions the bringing in of the flute, so it depends whether it comes from outside of Tchom or it comes from within Tchom. If it comes from the outside of Tchom, so then the Chachamim said that is gaining benefit of a malacha being violated, meaning trespassing, going beyond Tchom is an Isser. Again, 2,000 amas is a Isser d'Rabbanan, but still, it's an Isser on Shabbos. And so therefore, if a goy were to do that for you on Shabbos, so then it would be benefiting from a malacha that is being done for you on Shabbos, and you cannot benefit, you cannot use those flutes. Again, Rashi says, La'olam, Tosfos says only Bechtei Shiasa, but meanwhile, you cannot benefit. But if it comes Mimakam Karav, if it's coming within Chum, so then the Mishnah says that would be okay, and you can go ahead and you can use the flutes. Obviously, we're talking about using them after Shabbos. Tosfos over here is wondering. So the Tosfos, next Tosfos. Elohim came bal mimakum kar of Tema Larebi. So Tosos quotes one of the Bali Atosos, Mama Hanish bal mimakum karov. Halo habaim derech rishus rabim. Umali Aaron vekevish anasu b'shabbos umali chalilim shuvu derech rishus rabim. And Tosos says, I don't understand. Even if they're coming within Tchom, but presumably there's a street, there's a main street, and the possibility is, and the probability is that this flute was being carried by the non-Jew through a rishus rabim and eventually makes it into your house. And so therefore, one is violating going dal amos and rishus rabim, and probably going from a rishus rabim to rishus yachin. And so Tosfos says, I don't understand. Why does the Mishnah seem to ignore the malacha of hosa'a? The Mishnah's consideration is that it went beyond chum. The Mishnah's consideration is that the Aaron and Tachrichim were made on Shabbos. Why does the Mishnah seem to be not bothered whatsoever with the Isser of hosa'a? And so Tosfos asks that question. So Mali Chalim Shabbat Derech Rishus Rabin V'yeshlam De Havim Makom Karav Lo Mehani Kolka Chavoso. So Tosus ends very interestingly, and he says, okay, even if it went through a Rishus Rabim, so you didn't really benefit that much with the, by virtue of the fact that it went through a Rishus Rabim. Now, what does Tosus mean by that? So most probably what Tosus means by that is what he said in the beginning of the Masechta. Go back 3 short months ago, and we learned on day 1 of Masechta Shabbos, Tosus describes the malacha of Hotza'a as a malacha guru. It's an inferior malacha. Now, I always caution, when we say inferior malacha, meaning it is just as much of a violation of Shabbos as the other malachas are, it would be subject to all the punishments that all the other malachas are. So, a cautionary tale in terms of describing it as a malacha grua. But Tosfos uses that language in order to describe it. And what Tosfos means by that, most probably, is that unlike the other malachas where they're creative activities, the malacha of Otsah is just simply transporting an item from point A to point B. And so therefore, when you look at the malacha and comparing it to the other malachas, it is not the creative action that is done by the other malachas, but rather what it is just simply a malacha of movement, of transporting. And so what Tosfos is suggesting over here is that if we're talking about going beyond Tchom, now, admittedly, I'm going to struggle a little bit in terms of contrasting this to Tchom. But I'm still going to do it. I'm just going to struggle a little bit. So if we're talking about going beyond Chum, okay, so that's an Isser. If we're talking about making Aron v'Tachrichin, that too now is going to be an Isser, and there you see the creativity. But if we're talking about just simply the Malach of Hotza'a, so the Malach of Hotza'a, Tosfos says you don't really benefit much from it. And so therefore, if the non-Jew is doing it for you, so therefore it does not carry with it the kind of knas, the kind of penalty that the other activities do have with it. Okay. We are going to continue now. We are in the Gemara immediately after the Mishnah. So, my Mimakam Karov. Now, it says that if the guy is bringing in the flutes from a Makam Karov, so that would be acceptable. That would be okay because he didn't violate the Isser of Tchom. Now, to which the Gemara says, now, does that mean that you have to know definitively that he came from Makom Karov, as long as there's a possibility? This is a Machlokas Amarayim. Rav Amar Mimakom Karov Mamish. Rav says that he has to come. You have to know definitively that he came in from a Makom Karov. Ushmul Amar Chayshin and Shema Chutzuchoma Lanu. As long as there is a possibility that he was right outside of the walls of the city, meaning, the way Shmuel phrases it, you know, it's funny, right? We needed the flutes, and there was a mace that occurred, and we need the flutes, and lo and behold, this non-Jew appears from nowhere, and he's bringing the flutes with him, and he just came right outside from outside the walls. So, what possible explanation could it be that he came from outside the walls? So, most probably, what happened is that he came from another city, and thereby violating the Isser of Tchom. So Shmuel says, as long as it was within the realm of possibility that he was right outside of the city limits, and by the way, that means that he was there the night prior. And granted, by the way, this is an unusual circumstance we're painting over here, but he brought the flutes the night prior and he lodged right outside of the city limits, and then on Shabbos he walks in with the flutes. Okay, but as long as that's possible, Shmuel says that's enough. And that means to say that then you can go ahead and benefit and use the flutes for the funeral on Sunday. The Gemara says, now I'm going to tell you, if you read the Mishnah carefully, you're going to see that Shmuel's position is found in the Mishnah. Diktani, Aselo, Aaron, Bechafer, Lo Kever, Yikaver, Bo Yisrael. If an Aaron was made, and if the grave was dug, so then a Jew can be buried there. Amma Misfeka Shari. Now we don't know, meaning why did the non-Jew do it? We don't know definitively why he did it. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says that you can go ahead and use it. So Hachanami Misfeka Shari. So too here in the case of the flutes, when the non-Jew brings the flutes in on Shabbos, we don't know where he came from. Okay, but that's enough. Meaning, we don't have to know definitively that he came from within Tchum. As long as it's possible, so then we can go ahead and use those flutes. Tanya Kavase, the Rab, now the Gemara quotes a Braisa that is going to be supportive of the Shita of Rav. The Braisa reads, Ir Shikisov and Achrim Darim Balatei have a city. By the way, this is a Mishnah Machshirin. And this is not the first time that we see together the Mishnah in Machshirin. We saw it earlier in the Masechta. Anyway, Irshi Yisrael v'Nachrim Darim Ba, if I have a city where both Jews and non-Jews are living in the city, V'Aisabah Merchatz HaMerchatzes B'Shabbos, and there is a bathhouse in the city. So, and it's being used on Shabbos, meaning it's being heated up on Shabbos. So, Im Rov Nachrim, if the majority of the people in the city are non-Jews, so then a Jew can go there immediately after Shabbos and go ahead and bathe in it immediately after Shabbos. Aye, it was heated on Shabbos, but it was heated by a non-Jew and for a non-Jew, because the majority of the population in that city are non-Jews. Or maybe the better way to describe the population is that the majority of the people in the city using the bathhouse are non-Jews. Okay, so maybe I could be a little bit more careful in terms of how to describe the population. But anyway, the majority are non-Jews. And so therefore the heating of the water is for the non-Jews. However, Imrov Yisrael, but if the majority of the people in the city are Jews, so then Yamtim Ad Kadeshi Chamu Chamin. So now what you have to do is that you cannot go in immediately after Shabbos. You have to wait for what's called Bechdei Shiasa, the amount of time that it would take to heat up the water. Because if you went immediately after Shabbos, you are benefiting from the water being heated from a non-Jew for a Jew on Shabbos. And so therefore you have to wait. And Mechza Mechza. Now, here is the reason why we're quoting the Mishnah Machshirin. The first two cases were clear because there was a rov. Now, let's say we have a situation of half and half. So that means to say that if we have a scenario in which half the members of the city are Jew, half the members of the city are non-Jew. Now what? Meaning, at this point in time, when the bath attendant heated up the water, who did he heat it up for? Did he heat up for the Jew or did he heat up for the non-Jew? So we are now in a state of what's called a suffix. And says the Mishnah Machshirin, Ad Kedei Sheichamu Chamin, you have to wait. You have to wait until after Shabbos, until it would take the amount of time it would take for the water to heat up. And then, this next part is not relevant to us, but Rav Yehuda Amar Bambati Ketana, if it happens to be a small bathhouse, so Im Yesh Ba Rishos Rochetz Ba Miyad. If there happens to be a person of serious political clout in that city, the word rashus over here is a reference to somebody who is a politician of high regard, of a high position. Remember the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, al tisvadal rashus. A person should not be so comfortable with a person in political power. Anyway, so in yesh rashus rochitz b'miyad, so then you could use it immediately. So my rashus in the Gemara here, just is going to spend a moment explaining. So I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Yitzchak, Parei de Rav Yehuda, Im Yesh Ba Adam Chashev, if there's an important person, Sheish Lo Asara Avadim, who's got with him 10 servants, Shemechamim Lo Asara Kumkumim Bevas Achaz Bambati Ketana, can easily take 10 pots and go ahead and heat up that water. That means to say then, that under those circumstances, you know that this small bathhouse was heated on behalf of this one particular non-Jew, and it was heated by his non-Jewish attendants for the non-Jew, so then you could use it immediately. But anyway, what we got from that entire braisa, that was all tangential, but what we got from that braisa, that in a case of suffek, where half the community is Jewish, half the community is not Jewish, you have to be machmer, and you have to wait for the period of bichtei shiasa. And the Gemara says, now this supports Rav, because on the question of the flutes were brought in from outside of Tchum, and now the question becomes, do I have to know definitive? I'm sorry, if they were brought from outside of Tchum, then you can't use them. If they were brought from Makum Karav, then you can use them. Now, If they were brought from Makom Karav, does that mean definitively brought from Makom Karav, or as long as it's possible? Rav says definitively, Shmuel says possibly. And now this Brisa certainly supports Rav, because this Brisa says that in a case of Suffolk, you have to be Machmir. The bathhouse and half the community is Jewish, half the community is non-Jewish, you have to be Machmir. And you have to wait, Bechtei Shiasa. So the Gemara says the same thing over here. This supports Rav's position. Rav says, you don't know if it came from within Tchom or outside of Tchom, so then you have to wait. It's funny, according to Rashi, you have to do more than wait. According to Rashi, you can never use it. Cases, according to Rashi, are not totally comparable with one another. Okay, but anyway, but certainly the Braisa seems to support Rav. Asula Aron v'chafer lo kever. If we're continuing now in the Gemara is quoting the Mishnah, where that means to say that the Nachri went ahead and made the Aron, dug the grave. So amai hachanami yamtim bechtei shi'aseh. So the Gemara says, now shouldn't you have to wait until after Shabbos? So amar ula ba'omed basracha. So the grave in question over here was located on the road, on the Rishus HaRabim. This is not a place where Jews are buried. And so it was evident over here that the grave was dug for a Nachri, not for a Jew. Natenach kever, Aaron Ma'ik Alamim, the Gemara says, okay, I certainly understand how this works regarding the kever, but as far as the Aaron is concerned, that's the coffin. So how do we know definitively that the coffin was not made for the Jew? So Amar Rebbe Abau Bemutal Kivro. So it happens to have been that this coffin was made right alongside the grave. So the expectation is whoever's going to be buried in this grave is going to be using this coffin. Since the grave site itself is in a place where Jews are not typically buried. So that means to say then that clearly it was dug for the purposes of a non-Jew. And that's why the Mishnah allows for a Jew to be buried in it after Shabbos. And as far as the coffin is concerned, since it's proximate to the grave, so we're going to assume now that the coffin also was made and prepared for a non-Jew. And that's why you can go ahead and you can use the coffin as well. Okay, Adkan. We are continuing now here in the Mishnah. We're on Kufnin Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're on the bottom of the Amud, the Mishnah over here. The Mishnah is going to be discussing what could be done for a mace on Shabbos. The mace has the status of being a muksa. The Gemara, the remainder of today's daf is going to be discussing extensively some halacha and hashkafa of a mace on Shabbos. But for our purposes right now, what we simply need to know is that a mace has the status of being muksa on Shabbos. And by all items of muksa, you're not allowed to move it. And so, is there anything that you could do in terms of taking care of the mace as we're waiting now for Shabbos to come to an end? And the answer is going to be yes. Really interesting Mishnah. In this Mishnah, we get some of the minhagim that are done in terms of preparation of a mace before being buried. This is members of the Chevra Kedisha. This is the Mishnah that's going to be discussing some of the minhagim. But there is no Mishnah in Shas that is going to be discussing formally the minhagim of what should be done with the mace before being buried in terms of all the practices of the of a Chevra Kedisha. But at least we're going to get like a small little window in this Mishnah into some of the practices. The Mishnah begins. Osin kol tzorchei ha-mace, one is allowed to do all the needs of the mace on Shabbos. Now, when we say all, by the way, obviously it's going to be limited, but given the circumstances and given that the mace now is muksa, so the following can be done. And that is sachanu madichanu so. So you can rub oil into the skin in order to keep the body fresh, and also rinse them as well. And the oil, by the way, is also to try to help the smell, and so that the body does not become putrid. And also, you're allowed to rinse as well. You're allowed to wash the body without moving the body. Over vashlo yasus bo aver, the Mishnah says you're not allowed to move the body. You're not allowed to move a limb. So in other words, everything is going to be washed in place. And obviously, that means, of course, there are areas you're not going to get to. But okay, on Shabbos you're limited. Now what you can do is you can pull the pillow from underneath him. And even though he's going to be moving because you pulled the pillow away from him, but that's tiltum on the side, and that's going to be acceptable. Now why are you pulling the pillow away from him? Because what you want to do is that you want to slow down decomposition. And so if there's a pillow underneath, so that's going to create heat, and that's right now the enemy, because that's going to advance decomposition, and so you want to slow it down. So you're going to pull the pillow away. And what you can do is you can lay him down on the sand in order so that it will so that it'll be cooler over there and he will not decompose. Now, instead of pulling him on the sand, it means to say, again, tiltum and atzad, meaning not directly, but indirectly. And that when you pull the pillow away, so now he's going to be on the cooler sand. Kosher Nesalechi 1 is allowed to tie up his mouth so that his mouth doesn't open up. Lo sheyale elo shelo yosef. Now, what you're not looking to do is close the mouth, because again, Shabbos Muksa. So you can't move the body. But what you're allowed to do is that you can put some sort of wrap around the area so that the mouth doesn't open up anymore. If the orifice opens up more, so again, you're at risk of advancing decomposition, of having things enter the mouth. So you can just simply stop the mouth from opening more. Elishil Yosef, sorry. V'chein korosh nishbara. So some chanosah b'safsal baruch hasamita. Eloshitala eloshelo tosef. And the Mishnah says that as long as we're mentioning this halacha regarding a mace, so the similar procedure can be done regarding a beam. You have a beam in the house, and it broke. And now what you want to do is, on Shabbos, you can't put it back in place, a violation of binyan, but what you can do is that you can put items over there in order so that the beam doesn't fall down anymore, or doesn't bend anymore. And just like regarding the mace, what you're allowed to do is put something in place so that it does it, so the mouth doesn't open anymore. So to on Shabbos, you could put something in place so that the beam doesn't bend or come down anymore. Okay. We are in the Gemara on Kuf Nun Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara begins with the discussion. So, V'amr Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Maisa B'Talmidus of Rabbi Meir. There was a following episode regarding the students of Rabbi Meir, or specifically a student of Rabbi Meir. So, Shenichna Sachar of Lebeis Amerchatz went with Rabbi Meir into the bathhouse. Remember, there was a point in time when it was Mutter. Bikesh Lahadiyach Karka. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to wash the floor of the bathhouse. Amarloi Madichin. Rameir says to a student, you're not allowed to do that. Lasuch karka. The next thing he wanted to do was rub oil onto the floor of the bathhouse. Amarloi Sachin. And Rameir says, you're not allowed to do that as well. Now, why was Rameir saying no? So presumably, the Gemara is assuming right now, is that the reason why you're not allowed to do so is because the floor is muksa. And so the stones on the floor are muksa, and that which you're not allowed, and that which is muksa, so not only are you not allowed to move the item, but you're not allowed to rub oil into the item as well. That's right now what the Gemara is assuming. If that's true, that's the assumption, so then if you go back to the Mishnah, then you don't understand the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says you have the mace is muksa, and the Mishnah says that although you cannot move the mace on Shabbos, but what you're allowed to do is take oil and rub it into the skin on Shabbos. Well, what you are doing now is that you're rubbing oil into muksa. And Rameir told the student that you're not allowed to rub oil into muksa, assuming that we understand the case of the bathhouse correctly. So the Gemara says, okay, that's a good question, but only if you understood the bathhouse case correctly. You didn't understand the bathhouse correctly. We didn't understand it correctly. Karka bekarka michlefa. So meis bekarka lo michlef. So as Rashi understands it over here, the issue is not muksa. Rashi writes over here, Karka Bekarka Mechlif Klamar, Hahu La Mishum Tiltahu. The issue over there is in Muksa. So Ela Mishum Ashavoy Gumos. It happens to be the issue over there is smoothing out the ground. The Avagav Demerchas Ritzbas Avanimhu. And even though the bathhouse is made up of stones, Veleka Lamechas Ashavoy Gumos, now over there, nothing to worry about. It's not ground. It's just, it's stones. And there's nothing to smooth out. But Mechlif Mia Bekarka Achir. What you're going to end up doing is you're going to mix it up with another ground, meaning I remember in the bathhouse, oh, that's right, we rubbed oil on the floor. Okay, so in our homes, even though our floor right now is just simply the earth, it's the ground, so we were allowed to rub oil on the floor. And over there, where there is no stoning, there's no stone flooring, so then what you're going to end up doing is you're going to end up leveling the ground, and that's going to be a violation of binyan. So over there, the Gemara says, that's the issue over there when it comes to the rubbing of the oil on the floor. It has nothing to do with muksa. It has nothing to do with tiltal. Okay, now that we have a better and correct understanding of Rabbi Meir and the student, now when you go back to our mission, it's no question whatsoever. Because our issue over here is that the mace is muksa. Good, so you're not allowed to move muksa. But you're allowed to rub oil onto the mace. And Rabbi Meir is not a challenge whatsoever. Continuing in the Gemara. Kol asui emai. Now, if you look back at the beginning of the Mishnah, just turn back and look at the very bottom of the Amud Aleph, Osin Kol Sarche Hameis. You're allowed to do Kol Sarche Hameis. Now, even though the Mishnah gives examples, but whenever you see the language of Kol, it's coming to include something, and the Gemara wants to know, what is it coming to include? Lasuya had the Tanu Rabbanan, the following Brisa Mevi'in Klim, Meker Uklim Matachos. What you can do is that you can bring utensils, and they have cool water in them. And you can bring metal utensils as well. Uminichen al kreso, and you can put it on the stomach, kadeshalo tipoach, because what happens sometimes is that the stomach expands. And upokikin es, and so what you're doing now is basically weighing down the stomach so that it does not expand. Upokikin es nekavav, and what you could do is you could also stop up the orifices, kadeshalo tikanas bemaruach, so that air doesn't go into them. The af shlomo amar bechach maso, and this is what Shlomo teaches us. So in Koheles, the pasuk, ad asher lo yeirasek chevel hakesef. And what we're going to be doing now is that we're going to be quoting the pasuk and darshaning every phrase. So zuchet chut hashedra. So the silver rope, so to say, is a reference to the spinal cord. And v'sarutz gulas azahav. So zu'ama. And the gulas azahav is a reference to the to the male member. Visishaber kad al hamavuazu akeres, and the kad al hamavu is a reference to the stomach, and vinarota gagal al bor, and zeperes, that's a reference to the excrement, and vichenu omer vizerisi peres al pnechem feres chagechem, and the pasuk says that the excrement is going to be scattered all over a person's face. And the Gemara now goes on to explain what exactly Ishmael is describing over here. Amar Rav Huna v'Amri La, Amar Rav Chaga, Eilu b'nei Adam sheminichim divrei Torah, v'osin kol yimeim kechagim. These people live lives of luxury. Every day for them is a chag. Meaning on chag, obviously, you're supposed to enjoy and sit and lavish and luxuriate, but that's Yontif, and then there's the rest of the year. So over here, these are the kind of people that it behave in this manner year round. And so as a result of that, so Kadosh Baruch Hu basically says this is the kind of life you live. And so therefore, what's going to end up happening is that their stomachs are going to bloat, and it's going to and the excrement is going to come out, and it's going to go right into their faces, and it's mida keneged mida. Amar Rebbe Levi, Amar Rebbe Papi, Amar Rebbe Yoshua, La'acher Shlosh Yamim, Kreso Nifkas V'Nofelos Lo Alpanav. After 3 days, the stomach explodes, the insides end up going onto the person's face, V'Omeris Lo, as if to say to the person, Tomash Anasatabi, take back what you gave me, meaning what you gave me was too much. Okay, so obviously a strong, strong lesson in overindulgence. We are now on Kufnan Alpha Mudbeis, we are at the Mishnah, continuing our discussion regarding how to handle a mace on Shabbos. Ein ma'asmin es hameis b'Shabbos. So you cannot close the eyes on Shabbos, meaning that the person already now is post-mortem, and what you cannot do on Shabbos is that you cannot close the eyes, meaning, obviously, if it was during the week, you would want to close the eyes as part of covering a mace, but on Shabbos you can't do so. Again, that would be a violation of moving muksa. V'lo b'chol im yisiyas nefesh. Now, during the week, now, you can't close the eyes if the person's not dead yet. And even if the person is close to death and the person's approaching death, but closing the eyes would be a prohibition during the week. In fact, not only would it be a prohibition, so the Mishnah describes this as being an act of murder. So this is shvichas damim, anytime a person were to accelerate death. And over here, we're talking just about moments of acceleration, meaning that the person is on his way out. He's a goseis. And all you're doing now with the closing of the eyes is that you are just taking away minutes from the person's life. The Mishnah describes that as shvichas damim, that is an act of murder. Okay, so what we have over here is a Mishnah that describes the general care of the mace, specific to the closing of the eyes. Post-mortem, you can't do it on Shabbos because of muksa, and before death, you can't do it during the week because of shvichas damim. Tanu Rabbanan hama'atzmo imitzias hanefesh harizu shafach damim. And here the Gemara quotes a brisa. If a person closes the eyes of somebody who is dying but not yet dead. So the person who does so is in violation of Shvichas Damim. Mashal aner shekava ve'oleches. As a comparison, it's like a candle that's flickering. So adam minich esbo ala miad kafta. Now when you put your hand on it, it's going to go out immediately. Not really sure what we gained by the mashal. Okay, but anyway, but you're the one responsible for putting out the fire. You're the one responsible for putting out the light. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer Harod Sheshis Atzmo Einav Al Shalmeis. If a person wants the eyes to close, so the Gemara over here is going to give us a procedure to do so. Again, caution to all of us, unless you know that it works nowadays, don't try it. But anyway, the procedure is Nofeh Choliyayim B'chotmo. So blowing wine into the nose, V'no Sein Shemen Bein Riseinav, putting oil between the eyes, V'oches B'shnego Lav Raglav, squeezing the big toes, V'hein Mes'atz M'me'alehem, and the eyes are going to close on their own. Okay, various pressure points. Anyway, Tanya, we learned in a Brisa of Shimon Gamliel Omer, Tinok Ben Yomo, Echai Mechan Alav Es HaShabbos. If you have a baby that is 1 day old, so for that baby, your Mechal Alav Es HaShabbos, meaning if that baby's in critical condition, you violate the Shabbos. However, David Melech Yisrael, Meis Ein Mechan Alav Es HaShabbos, but if you have David Melech Yisrael who dies, and it's Shabbos, there's nothing to do. You cannot be Mechal Shabbos, meaning the remains is Muksa. Tinak ben Yomo, Chai Mechan Alav Es HaShabbos, Amar Torah Chil Alav Shabbos, Echa Kidei Shishmor Shabbos Osarbe. As far as the infant is concerned, where you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, the argument is, look, you're going to be Mechal Shabbos so that he can now go ahead and observe many more Shabbosim in the future. Now, just in terms of the allowance to be Mechal Shabbos for the purposes of Pikuach Nefesh, so if you think to yourself right now, I remember the Gemara giving a lot of different reasons. It's because the Gemara does give a lot of different reasons why it is that one can be Mechal Shabbos in order to save a life on Shabbos. So over here, the Gemara gives us the reason of the cost analysis. Meaning you're being Mechal Shabbos this Shabbos, but for the future now, he's going to be observing many Shabbosim in the future. And if you remember earlier in the Masech, in the 19th Perek, we had a Kav HaChomer. If one can perform the Mila, that's for Aver Echad on Shabbos, so certainly you can go ahead and you can save the entire body. That was the Kav HaChomer we had in the 19th Perek. And going to Yuma, in the 8th Perek of Yuma, so the Gemara says, how do I know that it can be Mechal Shabbos? The Pasuk says, V'chai Bahem. Right, we have a heter gamor that if a person's life is in danger, and unless it is the big three of shvichas damim, avodah zara, gilu arayos, so one is allowed to violate any other of the halachas in order to save somebody's life. So v'chai behem. So there are, to my memory, three different reasons that are proposed. Why are there three different reasons? It's interesting. The Gemara never really raises that as a question. The Gemara just advances these different arguments, but I don't recall, and I could be wrong, obviously, but I don't recall if the Gemara ever wonders why we need all these reasons, but certainly it is interesting that there are multiple reasons that are given. However, now we're back to the Gemara, David Melech Yisrael, Meis, Ein Mechalav, Kevin Shemes, Adam Batamana Mitzvos. However, once the person's dead, so now he is no longer responsible to doing any mitzvos. Now it's interesting, what's the alternative? But actually, I do have a suggestion for that. But in the meantime, however, he batal min mitzvos, meaning he's not chayv in mitzvos, and so therefore you're not going to be being mechal Shabbos at all. And when we say at all, it means not only are you not going to be violating yisur d'oraisa, you're not even violating yisur d'rabbanan, i.e. muksa. You can't even pick the body up. You can't move the body. V'hanu da'am Rabbi Yochanan b'meisim chavshi. The pasuk says that when a person is dead, he is now free. And the Gemara darshins, Kevin Shemes, Adam Nasa Chavshi Min HaMitzvos, when a person is dead, he is now free from doing all mitzvos. V'tanya, we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Tina ben Yom, Chai, Ein Tzarech L'Shomra, Menach Chulda, O Menach Barim. Other contrast between being alive and being dead. When a person is alive, even at 1 day old, so you don't have to protect him from weasels and from rats, meaning to say that because the person is alive, so the animals of the world have some sort of fear of this person. However, but he take the strongest person, not greatest, You take the strongest person like Og Melch Bashan, Sarach Lashomer, Menachulda Menachbarim. So you have to protect him from rats and from mice. Shenemar Marachem V'chitchem Yiyeh. So, and the Pasuk says that your fear is going to be on the animal kingdom. Kol Zman Shadam Chai, but that's when you're alive. Eimasai Mutalas Alabrios, Kemen Shemeis Badlu, Eimaso. So, I'm sorry, Eimaso Mutalas Alabrios. The fear of humans are going to be on the creatures of the world, on the animal kingdom. But once a person's dead, so then his Eima, his fear, is not going to be on the animal kingdom. Amar Papa Naktin and Aryeh, Abay Trein Lo Nofo. Now, Rav Papa has the following tradition, and that is that a lion does not attack two people. Hakachazinan denafal. The Gemara says, yeah, but empirically, we see that's not true. So, hahu kudarami bar Abba. The Gemara says, yeah, but I can explain that as well. Dami rami bar Abba in chaya shalotus ba'adam achenid maloka behema. That a chaya does not have dominion over a person until the person himself behaves like an animal. That when the appears like an animal to the animal, so that is when he is prone to an attack. A person cannot sleep alone in a house. He will be attacked by some sort of negative force. The Tanya will enter the Brisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Asay Acha'ata Motse Umatsui Lach, V'odcha B'yadcha. So, you should do it. Now, the it over here is a reference to tztaka. And as far as the doing of tztaka, Acha'ata Motse, you should do it right away, meaning as you have somebody who is ready to receive the tztaka from you, you should do it. And the umatsu ilach, and as long as you have the money to do so, you should be giving the tzedakah. Va'odcha b'yadcha, and that is while you are still alive, you should be giving tzedakah. Va'avshlomo arma b'chachmaso, and even though obviously the Torah gives us the mitzvah of tzedakah, but this idea that a person should be in a constant state of giving tzedakah, so this we're going to turn to now. And the pasuk in Kohelas, the pasuk says, "It's chur barecha, b'mei b'churasecha, ad asher lo yavo yimei ara'am." Remember your Creator while you are young, so that days of bad should not arrive. And elu yimei hazikna. These are the references to old age. V'yugu shanim asher tamar ein li b'hem chayfetz. So and days in which a person says, I don't have any pleasure in these days. Eile Yemei HaMashiach, these are referring, describing the Yemei HaMashiach. Shein behem lo zchus v'lo chova. Now there's not going to be zchus and chova, meaning to say that during the Yemos HaMashiach, so they're not going to be poor people. So the only opportunity we have to give tzedakah is before the arrival of Mashiach, because when Mashiach comes, there's not going to be any poor people. Now is that true, that there's not going to be any poor people? So clearly that's Rav Shimon ben Elazar's position, that there's not going to be any poor people. But the Gemara notes, this is subject to a debate. Upli de Shmuel. Now Shmuel is clearly on the other side of this argument. Amr Shmuel ein bein olam azeli yemos Mashiach ela shibud machus bavad. The difference, and the only difference between what the world looks like now and when the world looks like when Mashiach comes, is that the Jewish people are going to be an autonomous people, governing ourselves and within our own country, and that's it. Shenemar ki lo yechtel ev yom iker v'aretz. So the pasuk says there are always going to be poor people, meaning not only during our tkufa, but even the tkufa of Mashiach, there are always going to be poor people around. So the Tanya, we learned in the Brisa, Rabbi Elazar Kafar Omer, Lola Mivakesh Adam Rachamim Amidazu. Person should always daven for this. Notably, a person should daven that he does not become poor. Shim hu lo ba ba beno. Now, if poverty does not strike you, so it will go to the next generation. V'im b'no lo ba, ben b'no ba. Now, if it doesn't hit next generation, it'll hit two generations from now. Shenamar ki b'glal ha'davar hazeh. So, the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, demanding that we give tzedakah, And the pasuk says ki biglala davar zeh and tana be Rabbi Shmuel galgahu shechoser ba'olam, is just simply cyclical and it goes around and around. Am Rav Yosef naktinan haitzur b'mirabana lo me'ane. Rav Yosef says that, you know, we have a tradition that the Talmidei Chachamim do not become poor. The Gemara says v'aka chazin and the me'ane. The Gemara says again, it's empirical, and not only is it empirical, we see they become poor. So im osa de me'ane, im isa de me'ane. The Gemara says, yeah, it's true. They live an impoverished life, but they don't have to go knocking door to door. And we're finishing today with the following story. Amalo Rabbi Chiya l'devasayu. Rabbi Chiya says to his wife, ki asi ani, when if the poor person comes to your house, to our house, so akdem alei rifta. So make sure to be really quick, super quick, and give him a loaf of bread. Ki hecha de lekadmu levanecha. So that when our children end up becoming poor and asking for bread, so they're going to be receiving it immediately. Amar lei. Now she cannot believe what she's hearing. And she says, Mile kalaitabi? Laitalahu? What are you doing? You're cursing our children? You're saying they're going to become poor? Why do you have to say that? So Amar la kraka kasiv. What do you mean? I'm not saying anything that's not already in the psukim. Ki biglal hadavar hazeh v'tandabe Rabbi Shmuel galgahu shechozer ba'olam. It's cyclical. It just simply goes round and round. Okay. Let's do one more line. Tanya, we'll have to Rabbi Omer, kol amarachim alabrius marachim alav neshamayim. If you have rachmanis towards others, Hakadosh Baruch Hu has rachmanim to you. V'chol she'enem marachim alabrius, ein marachim alav neshamayim. Without having rachmanim to others, Hakadosh Baruch Hu will not have rachmanim upon you. Again, this is now related to how the way you treat others is the way you or your children are going to end up being treated. Going back to the story regarding Rabbi Chiya and his conversation that he had with his wife. Okay, it gives us now an opportunity to go ahead and to chazer the daf. Just as a quick review, we opened up today with a better understanding of Abishal. Abishal says that if you're allowed to talk about something on Shabbos, so I'm allowed to be mafshich al tchum. The Gemara first established what was he talking about, meaning in which case of the mission was he talking about, the Resha or the Seifa. Ends up he's talking about neither, because the language is said in the positive, which is not the Resha. The language is starting with Amira, that's not the Seifa. The Seifa was talking about Machshich HaLatchom, so it's talking about neither. So then what was he talking about? He was talking about the halach of Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel says that if two people want to create a reciprocal relationship where I'll watch your field because your field is outside of your tchum, but I can get there, and you'll watch my field because my field is outside of my tchum, but you can get there, so people can engage in those kinds of conversations on Shabbos, and that now got Rabbi Abba to say that if I could talk about on Shabbos, I can be machshech al tchum. Okay, and the Gemara spent the first sugya establishing the halacha of Abishal. Then the Mishnah goes and starts discussing what exactly can a person be machshech al tchum over. Iske kala, iske hames. If it involves a kala and a mes, these are mitzvos. So then, what one is allowed to do is be machshech al tchum, put himself in a position where immediately after Shabbos he'll be ready to take care of the needs of a kala and a mes. What if flutes are being brought over to you on Shabbos? That's the Mishnah now in the middle of Kufn and Aleph and Aleph. If it's brought to you by a non-Jew and it's coming from outside of tchum, so you cannot use them. Rashi says you can never use them. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, but that's the Pshat in Rashi. And also Arn v'Tachrichin, if it was built for you by a non-Jew on Shabbos, so you cannot use them. The Mishnah, Adkan Divrei HaMishnah. In the Mishnah, if the non-Jew made it for another non-Jew, or if the non-Jew brought it for another non-Jew, so then you can go ahead and you could use it. Okay, when the Mishnah says that if the non-Jew came from within Tchum, Makom Karov, so you can go ahead and use the flutes, does that mean that you know definitively he came from Makom Karov? Or is that as long as it's possible that he came from Makom Karov, a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, the Gemara ends up citing a Mishnah in Machshirin that is supportive of the halacha of Rav. That if it's a suffix, you cannot use the flutes on Shabbos. The Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, goes through the various techniques in terms of how to take care of a mace on Shabbos. The mace is muktzeh, you cannot move the mace. So what can you do? So you can wash the mace again without moving any limb. You can rub oil into the skin without moving a limb. You can remove a pillow from under his head, and so that he is now in a cooler place, so that decomposition is going to be slowed down. You can not tie up the jaw, but tie it so that the jaw doesn't open up any further. And the same thing is true regarding a beam that's falling on Shabbos. You can now put supports over there, not to put it back in, but so that just simply it doesn't come down anymore. The Gemara thinks that the issue of rubbing oil into the skin is a muktzeh issue. The Gemara says no. Rubbing oil into the skin is not a muktzeh issue. It's not comparable to the case of Rabbi Meir in the bathhouse. Rabbi Meir told the student in the bathhouse not to rub oil on the floor. That had nothing to do with muktzeh. That was an issue of Ashvui Gumos. Okay. The Gemara talks about what are some of the other things that one can do for a mace on Shabbos, including trying to prevent the bloating of the stomach. The next Mishnah on Kuf Nun Aleph Amud Beis talks about the closing of the eyes. If the person's dead, so you're not allowed to close the eyes on Shabbos because that is a violation of muktzah. If the person is not dead, so then you're not allowed to close the eyes because that would be a violation of Shfichas Damim, which obviously is not limited to Shabbos. That would be true during the week as well. The Gemara spends a lot of time contrasting a mace versus a chai. The advantages of being a chai versus a mace, one is that chilul Shabbos for a mace for a chai. Sorry, let's start with a chai. For a chai, you're mechal Shabbos. For a mace, you're not mechal Shabbos. That's one contrast. Another contrast is that for a chai, for a living entity, so there's going to be a natural fear of animals, a natural fear of the animal kingdom of the living person. But once the person's dead, so then no longer does that fear exist, and then he becomes vulnerable to an attack by all different types of animals. The Gemara describes the importance of giving tzedakah. A little bit off topic, but as long as you have money and you're in a position to give, a person should always be giving tzedakah. The Gemara describes it as critical for a couple of reasons. One, because we're not going to have an opportunity to do so in the times of Mashiach. Although this is a point of controversy, this says the Gemara. Are there going to be poor people during the times of Mashiach? So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, no, there will not be. And Shmuel says, sure. Shmuel says, nothing's going to change. Socioeconomics will be relatively the same during the times of Mashiach as they are now. It just happens to be that the Jewish people will be governed autonomously. But outside of that, the world is going to be looking very similar to the way it is right now. So according to Shmuel then, that's not the advantage of giving tzedakah. So what would be another advantage of giving tzedakah on a frequent basis, on a regular basis? And that is that if you give tzedakah on a frequent basis, so then poverty is a galgala chozer, it's cyclical. So if a person's not poor, but it could very well be that his child will be poor, could very well be that his grandchild will be poor, and his attitude towards the aniyim is going to directly impact how his child or his grandchild is going to be on the receiving end of being an ani. And so, because it's cyclical, so you know that the way you treat aniyim are going to be the way that the ashirim are going to be treating your next generations in terms of how they're going to be the recipient. Okay. Ad.